This is space. This is the final frontier. These are the cases before the court. Its mission: legislate strange new crimes, seek out new perpetrators and new defendants, to jurisprudently go where no law has gone before. This is the People versus Star Trek Voyager.
The People versus Star Trek Voyager is recorded in front of no one.
For the defense.
Commander Matthias Zapp Spurlock, Starfleet Pro Bono Legal Fund.
Prosecution.
Super Duper Looper Sea Lord, Super Duper Looper Admiral of the Grand Super Duper Looper Fleet, John Q. Continuum Esquire.
Judge.
The Honorable Midnightian Leader.
May it please the court, case on the docket is 324. Displace. Stardate 50912.4. Original air date 5/7/97.
Order in the court. As is well known to all here, these proceedings are being broadcast to Sector 9999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999 no rancor, no ribaldry, and not even a sniff of the lemongrass. The question before the court is this. Is Star Trek Voyager a misunderstood gem, or just plain, tawdry garbage? Now your opening arguments. Keep them brief.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will indeed be brief. Displaced. Yes, it does seem that clever writing has been displaced once again and replaced with this brain-dead story. Here we go again. Generic Voyager at its worst, at its best. I don't know. Sure, we get some decent character bits between Belana and Tom. Gee, I wonder where it's going. They're being so subtle about it. Except not. That's just one example of this episode's problems. No one is clever. No one. In the beginning, the Nerians aren't clever. Voyager and its crew are just dumbed down in the script to the point where they get bamboozled by these generic, stupid-hat aliens, and I hate them for making me use that word, bamboozled, and I hate them for making me look at them run around in those stupid hats for 46 minutes. And in the end, Janeway and the Voyager gang aren't particularly clever either. It was just the Nerians' turn to be monumentally stupid. A race that had abducted this many different groups of people, they would have better ways of keeping them all in check. They would, but they didn't. And so here we are at the end. Everything is fine. Let us never speak of this place again. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Thank you.
Commander Spurlock.
Your Honor, this episode is a technological marvel. It beamed away my boredom and replaced it with an invasion force of excitement. Mystery, violence, romance. That guy from Avengers who says, "There will always be men like you." The only thing it's missing is Kes, and we should be pretty damn used to that by now.
Now the evidence will be presented in the format agreed upon by the Fairfax Addendum to the Kittimer Accords. Audio recordings of three white guys interrupting each other. Play the holocron.
Or do you want me to turn the light off and we can continue to do this in the dark?
I mean, I kind of like it in the dark.
The darkness makes me feel as if nothing exists but this episode of Voyager.
All right, I'll turn the light back off. Lights off.
Lights off in the studio.
The People vs. Star Trek Voyager. Confidential.
Midnight in the city. City of dreams.
This episode begins
with a little trouble in paradise.
With a little continuity.
Yeah.
From an arc that began the episode before. Tom and Torres are leaving the holodeck arguing after he won the bet in the previous episode that they would go to the holodeck to do a martial arts program, a Klingon martial arts program, which it seems clear we're supposed to be imagining what Worf used to do every other episode on Next Gen, where he goes in and he fights a skeleton face man until he feels better about himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's how you get through life, man.
Yeah.
You gotta fight those skeleton face dudes.
I always wondered if it was always the same extra in the skeleton face mask having to fight him.
I would hope so.
So, oh, I got a recurring role in Star Trek Next Gen.
I'm the skeleton face guy.
But they're arguing. She's like, I don't like all of this Klingon stuff. You shouldn't have assumed that I would. You tricked me into this stupid bet. And he's mad, like, look, you know, I'm just trying to do something that was fun. I've tried this, and now I'm finished. But, it's fine if you didn't like it, but you don't have to be so hostile. And she's like, I am not hostile.
I am not hostile.
Yeah, pretty much.
As she shakes a batleth at him.
She shakes a batleth at him, and he's like, get that out of my face.
It's kind of funny when she's using the batleth to gesticulate and, like, pointing out things. And there's some pretty funny comic face acting by Tom Paris there, like, let's get this out of my face real quick before I deliver my next line.
Then some dude appears and he says, where am I? And that's the end of the cold open.
And it was the guy from Avengers.
It was the guy from Avengers. Like I was like, he's so familiar. It took me a couple scenes to be like, yeah.
There are no men like me. There will always be men like you. Look to your elders.
Which he's good in this episode too.
He's been in a bunch of other stuff he's too for super 25 years.
Yeah he's
he has an immediate gravitas. Until he's begging for his life in an ice world. We'll get there. So after the credits, we come right back to the exact same moment where he's immediately like, what do you want with me? Why did you bring me here? I was on this colony on Nero 3.
I didn't write
it down.
Are
you asking a question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, I was on my colony, and you stole me, and why did you do this? And they're like, calm down. Let us just, of course she has the batleth, so we get a good joke there. He's like, oh, you got a weapon. And she's like, nope, that's not for you. And they're like, let us take you to sick bay so we can make sure you're all right and figure out what's going on.
No iteration of Star Trek has ever really figured out fitness wear in the future, have they?
No.
Because what Tom and B'Elanna are wearing here look like peasant outfits or something. They look like they should be taking some sheep to market. I think back to TNG, the infamous calisthenic scene with Troy and Beverly Crusher with...
Oh, yeah.
You remember what I'm talking about?
Like the white robe one?
It's the one where Crusher's asking her if some guy makes her toes curl or something like that. It's
kind of an aerobics
sort of thing? Yeah, it's like an aerobics thing, but it looks like it's all made out of like those silver emergency blankets that
You don't know, man. They could have adjusted that Klingon training program. It could have a market stage.
Maybe so. Maybe they had to fight their way past the skeleton man to get... To the market with the sheep. Right. Okay. Yeah, that's true. I'll accept that.
They've added a little plot element to it.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a narrative we weren't unaware of. Was Worf just playing D&D the whole time and we didn't know?
I would assume so.
Yeah.
That's why he was always so mad when people came in, because he was trying to play Skyrim.
Yeah.
This is my Skyrim time.
I'm playing my Skyrim games.
I do not like to be interrupted.
So in sick bay, they're checking him out and they find out that he's very cold. So they've increased the temperature because he naturally likes a warmer temperature than the standard temperature on the ship.
So cold. So cold. Bright.
And they're trying to find out like what happened. How did it feel? He's like, well, it was very unnerving. And he said, well, describe the physical sensation. And he's like, well, first I felt like ants on my skin, and then there was a bend, and then a moment of blackness. And later in the episode, when you find out this is all bullshit, I wish they had done more to develop this character, because the concept of they do this all the time, this is how they invade.
Yes, this is how they invade.
And the first man through, the face man who has to go through and sell the con, is fascinating. And how they would choose him, how he decides to, like, being an older man and being very like, why are you hurting me? And
somebody who projects an air of vulnerability.
And do they change that based on the race they're infiltrating? Like, if it's a warlike race, do they present themselves as warlike? Or
I would imagine that they do, because they do talk at a few points about how much pre-study they do of these ships, of these people before they attempt to take over. So... yeah, that would actually be kind of interesting to think if there's this race hates old people.
Yeah.
Let's send somebody young.
Or this race is super violent. They normally kill outsiders immediately.
Yeah.
We need some reason why they
someone
wouldn't do
who
that
comes
this
bearing
time.
Gifts or something like that.
Yeah, or we present them as like, oh, this is the like kind of like that terrible Ferengi episode. Like this is a, oh, this is the promised holy one from yeah. your religion. We learned about it. An interesting idea that I had that they didn't really explore it.
You know, if they'd asked you back in 1998,
I'd like,
you
guys,
help them out.
Guys,
I got this.
Let's get into this.
I know I'm just
and
in
then
high
my
school.
My time duplicate from another dimension who is writing this would have been like, that's bullshit. Then he would have stabbed me right in my spleen. Okay. So he says, like, I found myself on your ship. I don't know how I got here. And they're like, okay, well, where are you from? He's like, okay. And then he starts describing, like, there's a red gas giant. It's the third planet. And they're all like, not ringing any bells. And I found that really interesting thinking about all these civilizations are spacefaring, of having to describe your neighborhood totally in astronomical terms.
Right.
Sure. That was interesting. And then he's like, oh, anyway, Kes, where is Kes? And I was like, isn't that the question, Voyager?
Mm-hmm.
Where is Kes today?
For two she doesn't have any lines.
Does she ever even show up?
She shows up.
You see
up.
Her
you
when
see
they go her, to oh, the, okay.
the prison ship.
When Baylana finally gets transported.
Baylana.
She kind of walks through the background.
You see her. Yeah, you see her in her blue velour. And that's it.
And cool. her new hair.
When she's first off the ship, I was like, of course. Let's get Kes out of the mix. Although maybe they had to do that, and maybe, oh, I didn't think about this at the time. You do find out later there is a kind of a rhyme and reason as to the targeting order.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There seems to be. So maybe getting the telepath off the ship first.
Oh, interesting. That makes
somebody
sense.
Somebody who, I mean, she's a telepath / empath, could have detected their duplicity.
These guys are not on the level.
Nature,
right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
I would.
Don't want to take the head engineer till last.
Right.
Because that could cause problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wizards. Telepaths, archers.
Yeah, wizards and archers
healers.
First.
Get the healers first.
And the healers, yeah. Mm-hmm. Those are standard tactics. Then they realize Kes isn't there, and they're like, when did she leave this time? When did he arrive this time? Aha! And then this is where I was like, is that the guy from the Avengers who doesn't kneel?
He's the one.
Okay, so then there's the next
He hasn't aged a whole lot since then, by the way. He looks about the same in Avengers
he's
as he does
looked
here.
56 forever.
He's got that Willie Nelson disease. That he looked 50 when he was 25, but now he's 90 and he still looks 50.
Yeah, yeah. So next scene, they're still working on the problem. Like, okay, there's been no other ships in this area for weeks. There's no energy trace. We can't figure out how this is happening. And it's a... Balana talking to Harry, and he's like, okay, we're going to do it. She's like, let's focus on the time. Let's look at all the sensor logs just for that moment, see if we can figure anything out. And he's like, okay, I'll get that started. It's probably going to take a while. It's going to take a few hours at least. And then she's like, you don't think I'm hostile, do you? And you can see him like,
oh, boy.
I knew this day would come.
I just want to do science stuff. I just want to do my job.
And he's like, no. And she's like, I'm not hostile. I'm forthright.
Like, you're pretty just funny. Assertive. Yeah, that's a cute scene. Good job by Garrett Wong there.
She's really like, funny. Why do you look like you're afraid for your life? He's like, gulp. And then, of course, to do the thing, she walks over to one side of the set, and then she turns back, and Harry's gone.
Da-na-na.
Then we start getting some blips of like people vanishing off, then more Nerians appearing on the ship, appearing on Party Beach. One wanders in, and there's two sexy bikini girls that smile broadly at him. And it's basically a quick montage of people blipping on and off the ship.
Yeah.
Then we get Tuvok being taken off the ship. Then we see all of them crowding into sick bay and the doctor's like, take a number. Then we start learning some interesting stuff. Like, okay, we've lost 22 people in 3 hours, and we've started talking to the people that are coming.
Right.
It's clear that we're switching places. That's what's happening.
Yeah.
But we still haven't figured out where they are in relation to where we are. They could be thousands of light years away, for all we know. There's these weird polaron fields that seem to be related, made up sciencey stuff. Fine. Then Baylana and Paris are reporting to the captain, and there's this interesting moment. It's a weird moment where, like, she has her arms crossed, then he has his arms crossed, and then she sees he has his arms crossed, and she uncrosses her arms, and then they cut to Janeway, and she does a microsecond flick of the eyes between the two of them.
Yeah.
I mean, she's like, I see what's going on here.
But I can't deal with this right now.
And honestly, like, it's honestly, it's too subtle. It's too subtle. Like, but I kind of love it. It's this weird, let's do a scene about body language, guys. Just about body language. Like, you naturally sort of mirror the person that you're connected with. Like,
yeah, but the first scene wasn't subtle at all, so.
Yeah, so it's weird to have this, fine. Like,
Yeah.
We could have had this interaction maybe 3 episodes ago.
Yeah.
That would have made more
back
sense.
Back before they started bringing this to a boil.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I like it, but it's kind of like it's a little the of awkward order. Kiss in the Kesh jumping back through time
yes.
episode a couple weeks ago.
Like,
it
yeah.
seems
Wah.
It
yeah.
seems out of sequence now that we've already seen, like, a pretty passionate connection between
right.
these two
They
characters.
Almost did it in the woods.
Yeah.
We're past
in
this,
a cave
like,
and
being
in the
coy
woods.
Stuff.
And,
yeah.
Right.
But I think that's the trouble of handing off week to week to different writers, different producers having the power that week, all that stuff.
Can we just be happy that they have the attention span to sort of connect the dots on this relationship
yeah.
and to call back to a conversation these two characters had in last week's episode?
Yeah. 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 No complaints. And honestly, like, I was, like, as being sort of opposed to this whole thing from the beginning.
Sure.
I've warmed to it. They're really fun together. They play off each other well. I don't feel like they are soulmates or anything, but I feel like this will be an interesting relationship that'll fizzle out after a few years. Maximum. Like, but we'll see. Don't you tell me. Don't you look at me that way with your bedroom eyes, with your knowledge of the future.
All right, turn the lights back on.
Turn the lights back on. Get your hand off my knee and turn the lights back on. Okay, so it was a weird moment. I enjoyed it, but also I was like, what a weird choice. And they left it in. Anyway, so this is when we finally get someone on the ship who's like, What the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Like, because everyone's like, oh, well, you know, this is happening, and we're sort of, and it makes sense, because you learn later that it's 9 minutes and 20 seconds between exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a very quick battle of attrition.
Yeah.
And they're just constantly reacting, so they never stop to think.
Yep.
And I think it's Paris is like, well, they seem nice, and Janeway's like, I don't care how they seem. And that's when I was like, aha, this is bad.
Yep. It's an invasion.
This is an invasion.
Yep.
And they purposely do not have us, they do not characterize any of the Nerians for most of this first part of the episode.
Yeah.
They're just random people walking around with very weird hats. It's definitely a choice. Their whole costume, their whole situation, it's weird. And I also find it interesting that they appear to be 100% human except for weird hats.
Yep.
And I'm like, did you guys just run out of money? Like,
yep.
This is where, like, we talked about this last episode briefly. Like, I've started to feel this back third of the season, like, oh, Lord, you're just, like, tying things together with baling wire and reusing sets.
But you don't know what horrors lurk under that hat. If you take that off, all snakes. All snakes.
Nah, man.
All snakes.
He doesn't have hair. He has dicks on his head.
Just dicks.
Eight
like
dicks.
Medusa, but dicks.
Yep.
And I said that, and I can't unsay it.
And nope.
So Janeway says something about this is wrong. I can smell it. So that's when they establish that it's 9 minutes and 20 seconds between exchanges. And in 18 hours, the whole crew is going to be gone.
Yeah.
And she's like, I have a knot in my stomach and I cannot explain it, but I know that something's very wrong. And as usual, if you've listened to this podcast for a while, I feel like 90% of the episodes have some point where I'm like, I really liked the first episode they were doing, and then they changed to a different episode halfway through.
This one's slightly less than what they were doing before.
But like, I was like, okay, this reminds me of that episode of Battlestar Galactica where the ship gets attacked every 33 hours, whatever the increment is. I know I'm showing my lack of nerd cred that I don't remember. It's like every 10 hours they get attacked, regardless, like they're just wearing them down. And I'm like, this is really interesting. So I don't know what's going to happen. Like, are we just going to play out this next 18 hours of slowly there are less and less crew, and we seem to be establishing that at this point, the Nerians are, like, useless, pastoral. They don't know anything about technology. They're the load. And it's going to come down to the last three crew members trying to solve this before they get bamfed off the ship. Because for what we know at this point, where they're going is thousands of light years away. They have no way to get back. They have no way to stop this. I was like, okay, cool. I'm digging this. I'm actually really interested to see how this plays out.
Because at this point, they think it's a scientific phenomenon.
Yes.
That's causing
it's this weird, yeah. like we hooked.
Maybe wormhole.
Yeah, we hooked on a wormhole and we dragged it with us. And
yeah.
Because that's how wormholes work.
Sure.
Maybe they do. I don't know. But then they jump.
We snagged it.
But then the very next scene, my dreams were dashed because they jump ahead like 8 hours because they say it's been 12 hours since the exchanges began. I was like, oh, okay. So if we threw away all that time, the whole rest of the episode is not going to be about the slow dwindling of right. the Voyager crew, which I kind of hate because the last moments of Chakotay and two random ensigns running the ship like is my favorite part of the episode.
Yeah.
Like I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. And when he goes into sabotage mode, I'm like, yeah, baby. Solid Chakotay. I'm about this. Okay, anywho, so they've lost half the crew. Janeway keeps being like, nope, put them in the cargo bay. So like, we're running out of room. I don't care. I want them working. Keep an eye on them. Then they check in with B'Elanna. It's like, you've developed a theory. He's like, yeah, I feel like maybe it's like a baby wormhole, but there's one of their astrophysicists I was talking to, Rizlin. Let's get him down here, see if he can help. Then Janeway gets blipped out. And Chakotay handles it as well as can be expected. He's like, get some answers, B'Elanna. Then we get a scene, a little short scene, just to establish that Rizlin is whiny. It's just him and Neelix whining about it's too cold. Why will the lights be dim?
Yeah.
Blah blah blah. And I'm like, ugh. Which I get when we learn this is all a scheme, it makes sense you would want to be annoying so that the people you're occupying don't want to deal with you and leave you alone.
And I think their instructions too, and again, maybe this is tailor-made for a Starfleet crew, is to go be helpless and difficult.
Yeah.
Because that is going to occupy the maximum amount of time and energy from a Starfleet crew that's unwilling to be like, just herd them all in there and lock the freaking door.
Yeah.
Like they're we have to treat each of them like a person. And
take
them
to sick bay.
And take them to sick bay. And offer them quarter and offer them all this kind of
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So everything that absorbs time is to their benefit.
This may be just a tailor-made approach for dealing with this crew in particular. Right.
Yep. So on the bridge, there's Chakotay's up there trying to deal with shit, and the one ensign that's at the security con, who I don't think gets a name, sadly, she's great. She's like, there's a circuit relay malfunction, and he's like, whatever, we don't have anyone to fix it, just deal with it. And then they get the slow pan of the empty ass bridge, which I'm like, nice. Then he's like, how does it feel to be chief of security, ensign? She's like, it's all I've ever dreamed of, sir. And I was like, haha. I'm sorry, we'll never see you again, random ensign. We got hired to be in this one episode. Then we learn that he calls down to Neelix. Neelix is gone. We learn there are 40 people left. And then Chakotay, being smart so far in this episode, says, okay, it's time to make security preparations. Like, if this is not above board, we need to lock down every part of the ship we can. We need to set, put all the command functions only where we can access them.
Right.
He says, let's hope I'm just being paranoid.
And I'm like, but you're not.
But you're not.
At this point, you basically know that you aren't.
So then we go to B'Elanna and Rizlin in engineering. She's like, okay, there's no quantum level fluctuations. It's not a wormhole at all. And she's like, well, I should do this kind of analysis. And the guy's like, I don't think you should do that. It would be a waste of time. And then later you realize, of course he knows if she does that specific scan, she's going to figure it out. And then she's like, I don't think this is a natural phenomenon. Then he attacks the security.
Chop!
Chop!
Crewman goes down like a sack of potatoes.
Yep. And then she's like, you've been behind this all along. And he pulls out a thing, a data pad, starts hitting. She's like, what are you doing? You're like, moving you to the head of the line.
Her reaction speed leaves something to be desired here. She's just sort of, to be like the badass Klingon woman that she is.
Yeah.
She just sort of stands there and stares while he enacts this phase of his evil plan.
Stop pushing those buttons.
Yeah. Hey,
stop it right now. I'm going to come over there.
Wait a second. What are you? That's not the replicator. Are you trying to get coffee?
then we get a quick shot of Torres on the planet in the prison. And then we see the dudes with guns. And you're like, oh, okay. The jig is up for us as the audience. There's no more illusion.
Right.
We know the silly hat people are the bad, silly hat people.
They're the bad, silly hat people.
We know that they're kidnapping people. We don't know why, and we never find out why.
They never say why they do this. Not once.
Yeah, they did.
No, they don't.
Nope.
Yeah, they did.
What did they say, Jonathan?
They collect people.
I intuited that we only ever see about supposed to be like maybe 200 of them. I was like, maybe there are only 200 members of this race, and this is the only way they can survive. Maybe me like being super generous and be like, the way they operate this way is there's just a very, they have a very small population.
Or maybe they're collectors. Like
collectors.
I don't know.
But it seems like they're invading just because they want that. They want this colony, they want this ship. But then you find out that their prison ship is far more technologically advanced than Voyager.
I mean, Voyager's like, a jalopy.
What's Voyager
to what
got that you want?
So,
yeah, it doesn't
and I'm stuff. It's got stuff.
Biomimetic gel packs. We haven't invented those yet.
We replicate cheese.
Yeah.
Can't get cheese on
can't
our
get
planet.
Cheese. So on in the little prison place, they take B'Elanna's comm badge. Janeway tells her, like, they've given us food, water, medical supplies, but that's about it. And then someone says, like, it seems like an idyllic version of Earth. And then all we have are unanswered questions. Then it jumps back to Voyager, where they're like, okay, it's time for solid Chakotay.
Mm-hmm.
Chakotay is running around with a phaser. He finds he goes to the cargo bay where they're all supposed to be.
He's got camo face paint.
Otacon, I'm coming. But they're all gone. Just left all their blankets there. Didn't even fold them up. Rude. Then he goes on the con. He's like, all right, anyone who's still on the ship with me, get to the bridge or main engineering. Take control of it. They're coming. Go, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Then we get a quick shot with the leader of them. Like, you know, a second team take control of the weapons, reinforce the, you know, like, basically just a quick scene of, like, all of them moving and trying to take control, like, reinforce the doors and keep them out of engineering.
Right.
Doesn't work. And they're running around trying to protect the ship. And I'm like, where's Suter when you need him?
Yeah.
This is a job for a pet serial killer. Yep. You could just release into the Jeffries tubes and no way to guard against that. If he's just sneaking behind
people, as we've learned,
cutting their Achilles tendons.
Anyone can break into Voyager. Anyone can break out of Voyager. Yes. Anyone can board Voyager. Anyone can beam Voyager the whole ship.
The whole ship.
Because it's basically a dinghy. We have to accept
it's
it.
It's a long range patrol ship. It's meant to go out for a week or two and come back.
They should have just had a backup saved of the murder doctor.
Oh, the Darkling doctor.
Darkling, too dangerous. Darkling doc, man.
Unleash him, doc.
So anyway, Chakotay's running around. And he's like, he is him and Gennaro, who I don't think we ever actually see. He's just a guy, just a voice on the con.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, well, we should make life as difficult for them as we can. And I was like, hell yeah, it's time for sabotage. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is perfect. Because I was like, it's the Maquis way, y'all. Like, he is the one best suited to fuck up the ship. And this, I'm like, okay, cool. I'm digging this.
He's in Maquis mode here.
Mm-hmm. Solid Chakotay. Meanwhile, on the bridge, like, okay, we'll have full computer access soon, no navigational control. Oh, no, there's two men running around breaking shit. Find them. then they're chasing Chakotay around. He's climbing around. It's very an Action Jackson sort of sequence.
And Chakotay seems to be enjoying this just a little bit.
Yeah.
Nice job by Carlos Beltran to have
Senor Octubre.
Senor Octubre to just have the slightest of almost imperceptible smiles on his face as he's ripping out power conduits and just making life generally miserable for the people.
He's
on
like,
board.
It's so much easier to break a ship than to keep it together.
Once again,
yeah.
We know his name is Robert Beltran. Just so you know.
Yeah. If you haven't been following our continuity.
It's a bit.
It's a whole thing.
He could also be Roger Beltran.
Yeah.
Did we do Roger one time?
I think you call him Roger.
I call him many things.
You call him Roger, like, seriously thinking that's his name.
I'm Roger. Okay, so he shuts down the warp core. Then he blinds them with the light. I was like, oh, cool. We established that they're very sensitive to bright lights. Nice. Like it. Then he realized, like, okay, they're trying to delete the doctor's program. And then I got to get down there. And he's like, okay, how long has it been? And he tries to call Gennaro. Gennaro's not there. And he's like, okay, computer, how long has it been since he left? He's like, it's been 7 minutes and 2 seconds. He's like, only, so we're like, 20 seconds. We're like, only 2 minutes remain. I'm like, oh, hyper mode.
I also took that to mean that Gennaro didn't complete the task that he was told to do as well. Probably 7 minutes since he was beamed away pretty quickly.
So he goes in, he brings out the EMH. He's like, it was like, Commander, what's happening? He's like, I got to download you into the mobile emitter, but and before they come in and get me, and I'm about to teleport out. Any second now, he does it. He pulls it off. He grabs the emitter and holds it with them. So when they beam him, he takes the doctor with him.
Yeah.
Cool. And then they come in, they have the guns on him. He's like, hey, guys, I know when to quit. And then he gets teleported out of there.
Though I... Could this have worked if he had just been holding... Looking forward, looking ahead as to how they used the doctor, could he have just been holding a tricorder?
I think they would have taken the tricorder away.
Okay.
Because they take away the comm badge like immediately at gunpoint. And they've clearly done enough research. Surely some of those people that teleported over had a tricorder, had something
useful. Had a phaser on their hip.
Had a phaser. Yeah. They would have taken that shit away immediately. So it actually turns out to be kind of cool and smart that they turn him into a tricorder later. Sure. I actually thought that was one of the smarter parts of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So.
And the fact that he... feels the indignity of that, of being reduced to yeah, we know that you're sentient and extremely sophisticated, but we just need you to do what this little like just iPhone thing we carry around.
We need you to be an app now. For a minute.
Yeah.
So right back now, all of them are in the little cage, shall we call it. The doctors and Torres are working on the emitter, and he's, of course, immediately concerned, like, I've never been completely cut off from the ship before. What if the power supply runs out? And I was like, oh, shit. Also, I feel in our, like, their slow incremental introduction of the hollow emitter and its limitations and how it works, this seems to be a concrete piece of information. Like, okay, it has a limited power supply.
Yeah.
They don't say how long, which is smart. Good work, Voyager writers. But we know it doesn't last forever. Let's see. If that ever comes up again.
One thing that's kind of interesting about that, though, is so like this iPad in front of me right now, if the battery runs all the way to 0% on it, it doesn't just dump everything that's in the hard drive.
Yeah.
Because it's not how hard drives work even in the 20th or 21st century.
Fair.
So why that occurred, and maybe his programming is too sophisticated. Maybe it has to have a flow of power in order to sustain his algorithm or something like that. But it seems like it'd be like, well, then you'll just, vanish back inside the emitter and we'll boot you back up when we have a power source. But nope. You're right. They're setting up to introducing a mechanic so that the doctor can't leave the ship indefinitely and just go
live his life.
Tour the galaxy.
Yeah, tour the galaxy. Yeah. Okay. So Tuvok comes back from his scouting mission. He learns that there's supposed to be 10 of these little like enclaves spread out through the forest. He says it's about 4 square kilometers. Then mean hat lady comes in. She's like, could I have your attention?
She's got the meanest hat out of all of them.
God, she's so severe. Welcome to your new home. We've found a way far more effective than warfare. We've created an environment in which you will be comfortable. Literature and entertainment. I'm like, oh, God. Oh, God. Yeah, here's a book. Read it forever, fools.
You have 5 books.
And they're like, and of course, Janeway is like, we don't accept that. We're getting out of here. He's like, there's no way to escape. It's so wonderful here. Why don't you just accept that it's great? She's like, it's still a prison.
Yeah.
And she's like, I suggest you accept it.
Your lack of gratitude is unbecoming. Janeway gives her a look that really can only say, okay, you'll die first.
I will
when I enact my plan, I'm going to make sure you're the first to die.
And this is sort of the first beat of like, okay, I thought the episode was at A. Now we're on B. I'm like, okay. So now it's about being in prison, which is a topic that Voyager has explored before. And the concept of you have everything you'll ever need. You'll have food. You'll have water. You have entertainment. You have each other. Everything's going to be great. But it's still a prison. And, of course, no human being can accept imprisonment.
We also have yet another technologically superior adversary for Voyager. We've had about 4 of those in the past 6 weeks. So they're establishing in this part of space, Voyager is just going to be outgunned and out-teched by anybody they encounter.
Yeah, apparently. Which is interesting because initially when they arrived in the Delta Quadrant, they were dealing with the Kazon and like, oh, we can nuke these dudes. Yeah. These are no danger.
Yeah, if it came down to it, they could always shoot their way out of, not that they want to, but they could shoot their way out of a situation in season 1 and 2. Yeah, that's the case now.
So I was like, okay, cool. So now they're imprisoned. So instead of being A plot, B plot running in parallel, we have A plot. Now we're on B plot. And I'm like, okay, I don't necessarily not like this.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I always like when they're sort of separated from the ship, and like just like the first episode of the season where they're separated.
Yeah, basics part
they have
two.
To form a tribe.
And yeah.
So of course she calls in her head scout, Tuvok, tell me about this wilderness. He's like, well, there's natural barriers. He's like, there's a mountain, there's a really big river, and I'm like, a really big river. Mm-hmm.
It's an really impassable river.
An really? Impassable river.
Yeah, this one, don't even try. I've seen a lot of rivers in my day, and this one's impassable as shit.
It's really wide.
So wide.
It's
how will
really,
we,
really deep.
All these
man.
Trees surrounding us, how will we ever, as humans, get across a river?
And it's full of river sharks.
Oh, you didn't mention the river sharks.
They got phasers for eyeballs.
It's a river full of phasers. It's not even water. It's a phaser river.
It's a phaser river.
Phaser river.
if you touch
that's,
it, it goes
oh, that's
off.
A band name right there. Phaser river.
I like it.
Okay. So, of course, Janeway is like, it's so convenient that we're perfectly isolated. This must be like a holographic projection or something. And it bugged me. This is probably the thing that I think in general, I basically like this episode, even with its many problems. But this part right here,
this was
where she's like, man, it sure is convenient that we're perfectly isolated. Then they introduce the convenient, helpful NPC.
Mm-hmm. That was my problem with a lot. Everything
this
that happened,
back half
it's
of the episode,
so convenient.
It's like conveniently at that exact moment that you said the word convenient. A convenient dude named Charleth walks through a rock and explains to you how to escape.
Which, if he had all been part of the trap somehow, that would have made sense.
Yes.
But the fact that he is, well, at least at first, for like 5 minutes, trying to be genuinely helpful, just makes it seem like screenwriter 101, well, they just said convenient, so let's have something convenient happen.
Oh,
this is a perfect time to transition into the next phase of the story and introduce a new character.
Well, it's so weird to me because, like, you've set up A-plot, which is the weird invasion thing. Cool. B-plot, we're in this prison. How do we escape? And I'm like, yeah, how do my heroes escape? Hey, I'm here to
with
tell you how to escape.
With this guy's help.
I'm here to tell you how to escape. Admittedly, they have to do some things with his help, but they get a huge...
And he does rat them out here in about 5 minutes, too.
It's true. But also, like, that character was totally unnecessary.
Right.
They could have had the Dr. Tricorder find the portal.
Yep.
Plot proceeds as normal.
Yeah.
Yep.
Admittedly, I like this character, even though I feel like the way he's written, he is season one Neelix.
He was.
It's a guest starring season one Neelix as Charleth, your neighbor.
Like, here, go talk to that guy over there.
Wow,
go talk
to Neelix. Carrot sticks are delicious. He pulls a Kramer. He just kind of barges in and starts eating their food.
Yeah, exactly. So they talk to him, like, where did you come from? He's like, I'm from the enclave next door. He's like, oh, this place is so green. And he's like, okay, there's different biomes for different races. Makes sense. We've been here. Basically, you find out that a few things very quickly, that his people have been there for... about 9-10 years. They're basically pretty happy with it. Like, they hated it at first, but now they're like, it's great here. There's plenty of food. We don't have to worry about anything. And I just pop over here periodically to trade with whoever is in...
Whoever happens to be in this room.
Yeah, the last ones died of a plague. Oh, well. Hopefully that won't happen to you, though. You guys seem great. And then we have a nice, like... where he's like, I want to trade stuff. She's like, information is a valuable commodity to me.
If they're living in a controlled environment, their needs are being met, and one of the groups died of a plague, I think you can assume that plague was introduced.
Yes.
Which, again, coaxes more questions in terms of, okay, so they keep people there for a while. Mm. They kill them off at some point. For what purpose? Mm-hmm. Why do they take them? I mean, they could just gas them all right now, like,
yeah,
you know,
I don't...
or something like that.
All they need, and even it would have been super lazy, but all they needed was like one line. And all of these Nerians talk a ton.
Yeah.
There could have been one line with like, well, we should just kill them. No, the Great Mother forbids.
Or something like that.
Just something to suggest there's a cultural, religious reason that they capture people, they don't kill them.
Not before they're ready for the harvest.
Yes.
Or something like that. Oh, okay, they eat them at some point.
Something.
You know, yeah.
Because that was the initial plan, actually.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
When it was the the story was first thought up was that they were all getting fattened up to be eaten.
Well, that's actually cool.
That would be cool.
This is it's like rotational crops. Yeah, like we got some soybeans over here. You walk through the tunnel. You got some wheat on the other side.
For whatever reason, that didn't end up in the final script.
Yeah, well, let's save it for the end.
Yeah. I
have some thoughts on that. Okay, so now we have Torres and the doctor turning the doctor into a tricorder, which is just a cool idea. It is. Obviously, they'll never use it again because it's too useful. But where he's looking around, he's like, everything is glowing. I've reconfigured your optical sensors. My new career is a tricorder. Ha ha ha. Now we get the next bit of Torres and Paris trying to work out their relationship problems.
Yeah.
And they're basically talking about how you're oversensitive and you're defensive. And she's like, you're the one that's defensive. You always pretend like everything's a big joke. And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm just an easygoing bro.
I'm just a chill guy. Like to listen to some tunes, have some good times.
Yeah, and I love they have the doctor there. He's like, well, defense mechanisms do come in many forms.
That's kind of funny, actually. His psychobabble in the background.
A fear of intimacy, and then she turns off the doctor's mouth, mutes him, and he's like, the look on Robert Picardo's face of how dare you. Eventually, this time, Paris storms off like, well, fine, I'll just stop wasting my time trying to be your friend because I just want to be your friend. Yeah, that's how friends talk to each other.
That's my only motivation here, just to be friends.
That's the subtext.
If you thought it was something more than that, then you wish in your dreams.
I'm just a laid-back bro, trying to be a bro with you, Blana.
Where's my skateboard?
Where's my skateboard? Okay. Then we get also another scene that I really liked of Tuvok... Is it Tuvok, Chakotay, and Neelix?
Yes.
Assembling rudimentary weapons out of just whatever crap they can find. Yeah. I'm like, yes, the great escape in space. Like, that's what I want this episode to be, and right. It's not. And I accepted it and moved on. But this whole section of it's so odd that you can, like, improvise as a Vulcan. Isn't that difficult for you? He's like, well, flexibility is required, and it's a weapon. I will immediately build a weapon in any scenario because it's the most logical thing.
If you had any idea how many guns I've built in my life, you'd be horrified to talk to me or set foot in my living quarters.
Yes. Then Chakotay is like, it's interesting because Chakotay's like, well, this reminds me of the survival classes at the academy. They just drop you out there for like a week and you got to survive. And,
right.
And then, of course, Tuvok's got to be like, well, I did the Rite of Taloth, where I survived in a desert for 4 months with only a small penknife.
Yeah.
And you're like, and I really wanted Chakotay to be like, well, actually, when I was a child, my tribe's initiation ritual is 6 months
and
in a lava pit.
In the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, exactly. Which I was like, this is the one character that might be able to one-up this ridiculous Vulcan ritual.
Yeah. No.
But they didn't do that.
He wasn't into that shit as a kid.
I know.
So don't,
but he could have lied to make me happy.
Yeah.
Or just
how come they only remember continuity when it doesn't give Chakotay a sick burn? How come? Does Memory Alpha tell you that?
Yeah. Look that up on your precious Memory Alpha.
Reasons.
But anyway, it's a nice scene. I like
it. That's fine.
So now we go to the doctor looking around and being bored of looking around. He's like, I'm getting tired of this.
Holograms don't get tired.
Yeah.
You're just programmed to say shit like that.
Uh-huh. Then all of a sudden, Captain, we found something. It's directly in front of me. And then they find the portal out. Convenient that it's the portal out, not the portal to like
somewhere
Lizard
else.
Neelix's house or the next cell over.
Right.
Okay, fine. And he's like, well, I'll return to my medical duties. Blah, blah, blah. So they go through the portal into the creepy space station.
Space station.
They split up. They brought Charlith with them.
I don't. Was don't it really sure know why?
I don't know, man.
I mean, he was there. He maybe it would have been rude to be like, hey, we're going without you. I guess we'll have to invite him along.
He's like, I don't think we're supposed to be in here. And then they start opening. Like this, he splits off with Torres and Paris, and then Tuvok and Janeway go to do useful stuff. And anyway, they're off and they open some doors. They find a jungle room and a really beautiful, like the door they open that has the beach and it looks like a lighthouse.
It's a cool setting.
I was like, yeah, what's in there? Like yeah. It was immediately evocative and cool. I was like, oh, I want to know everything about what's in that room. But we don't go back there. Then we go back to Tuvok on the prowl with his improvised phaser, which the way they built it, it looked like a sword hilt. I was like, if that's a laser sword, it's just a phaser. It's fine.
Settle down. Everybody relax. Relax.
But they find some kind of control station. And he's like, oh, I can't read this. Well, let me see if I can access their translation algorithm. And then it translated. It took 2 seconds. It's like,
that was a little fast.
A little fast.
I said it before. Got a hand wave translation stuff. Okay. I get it. Okay. Otherwise, we would just spend all our time on this
show.
But
they hand wave everything.
No, they don't hand wave everything.
And this one they do.
What else?
The convenient dude from Cell Next Door.
Oh, that's not a hand wave. That's just
bad timing.
That's just lazy writing.
On the part of the screen.
That's just
writer.
Lazy writing. That's not them hand waving a technical problem away.
Well, yeah.
That is lazy writing, though.
If you're going to throw a flag, you have to throw the right flag.
That is lazy writing, though.
They're both lazy writing, both but a square is not a rectangle. But a rectangle is a square.
But I still defend
a square is the best meal of the day.
Is a rhombus also a square?
No.
A square is a rhombus.
Okay.
Is that right?
Could be. This is not a math podcast. Not a geometry podcast.
Yeah. Wait, which one is a parallelograms?
I don't know.
How do you not know these things?
There are 94 environments on this ship.
One's made for parallelograms.
Well, yeah, there is one perfect
one for living parallelograms.
Living parallelograms.
Floating around.
Being parallel. Yep.
But Tuvok and Janeway figure out, like, we're on a ship. And in everything they say about this ship makes it clear that it's this technological marvel. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's huge. It's crazy. The translocator, everything. What? They're blown away by it. Like, okay, the command center is 4 decks above us. Let's go. So then we jump quickly back to Voyager on the bridge, where the leader of the Nerians, whose name I don't think is ever said, he's like, okay, some life forms have escaped their habitat, but which has never happened before, apparently. We may have to use some stronger measures. Yeah. And he's like, you have the authorization to use force.
Use the force.
The force.
They're all Jedi.
You may unleash the mind bullets.
The mind bullets.
Yeah, so these people hate violence. But they're totally okay with imprisoning you against your will.
Forever.
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 Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah. Actually, the thing about them being so loath to use force would make a lot more sense if they had gone forward with the motivation of this is food stock,
yep.
Basically. Because, like, you know, if, like,
don't ruin the meat, man.
If your cows are rampaging, you don't want to shoot them. You want to calm them down, right? Mm-hmm. So
calm meat tastes better.
God.
Is that true?
Yes, of course it is.
So I do, like,
he does a lot of tests on the weekend.
I test the meat.
Oh, God, I'm moving on. Take your hand off my knee.
Anyway, this episode is fine. Turn all the lights
anyway,
on.
Anyway, the podcast canceled. Goodbye. All right, so they jump back to Torres, Paris, and Charleth, I think is his name. They're like, he's like, let's go back. And they're like, look, if you want to go, then go.
You big baby.
You big baby, why did we bring you? And they storm off. Then, of course, the Nerians find him, and he's like, I surrender. They went around that corner, literally the only way they could have gone from where we're standing.
Aren't I helpful?
Uh-huh. Then we see, next scene is Tuvok and Janeway breaking to the command center, a sweet Vulcan nerve pinch. I'm glad that's rising in usage, not falling.
It's convenient that all humanoids throughout all quadrants of the galaxy have that nerve that runs right there.
I've always thought of it as like it's secretly a psychic attack.
It's a psychic attack.
And it doesn't have anything to do with your nerve cluster. Yep, they just have told people that to keep everyone
so
calm.
No one complains about the fact that you're messing with their minds.
Just a nerve.
Any nerve.
All that's connected to
any
your,
nerve.
Sure.
To your brain.
Yeah.
Then they're looking at the scanner stuff and like, okay, I see that our lizard friend got sent back, and Paris and Torres are still running around. We got to figure out how to use this stuff. Then on Voyager, they basically are saying like, hey, we're on our way. As soon as we get there, translocate the entire security force so we can go over there and deal with these these four escaped people. This is where I started developing the theory, like, maybe there are only 200 of the Nerians. So they have to, that's why they have to do this weird invasion plan, because there's not a lot of them. Maybe there was some tragedy where they lost the ability to have children. I was filling in lots of blanks trying to make this make sense.
But they also said they'd take over space stations like this too.
So yeah, and coal colonies and stuff like that.
They would have to have more than that.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Well, anyway, Torres and Paris sexily are running down some tunnels trying to get out of there. They're like, okay, the phasers don't work. There's the field that makes things not work. They're like, okay, we got to hide in one of these habitats. And then they're like, wait. And they find one that is an ice level. And they're like, okay, remember, they hate the cold. This is the last place they'd want to follow us.
They'll freeze to death slightly faster than we will.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is a great idea.
It's a pretty good gamble.
No. No.
What?
This is dumb.
They run through. Then the leader sends... the Nerians after them. He's like, follow them. That's an order. What were you saying? I'm sorry.
Why wouldn't you just shut the door? Leave them there.
You have to be outside to shut the door.
They were outside, right?
Oh, just leave. Oh, you're saying the Nerians just leave the humans
leave
in.
Tom and Perry.
Wait for
leave
them to die.
Leave them there and let them die. Scoop them up later.
He said, follow them. That's an order.
She said, follow them.
Well, also, if they have a means, they don't know how they're finding the tunnels yet, so they could go into that particular biome, find another tunnel, exit out into another part of the ship.
Oh, another portal? Sure.
Yeah.
Potentially. But they could go to...
Yeah, but they literally could have waited 20 minutes.
They could have retaken the control center and just, you know, followed them, tracked them that way.
I think we're still functioning under the idea that they are trying to refrain from killing them as well.
Yeah, it's one of those, it's a dumb decision, but it's not like... an illogical decision. Yeah. If you're chasing them, they run in there, you keep chasing them, like, in the moment. Obviously, cold brain, tactically, it would have made more sense to do something else.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's far from the worst offense in this episode.
Boss said we gotta follow him.
We're gonna die in like 8 minutes, but okay.
They're hiding in the lava pit.
Okay, meanwhile, Janeway and Tuvok are working on the translocator. Which I guess this predates the cross light year beaming that appears in the Star Trek Beyond Darkness.
Transwarp beaming?
Transwarp beaming.
Oh, yeah.
Voyager did it first again.
Yeah, I know. I'm telling you. Add it to the pile.
Well.
Add it to the pile of things that the world owes Voyager. J.J. Abrams.
But because they're not beaming onto a ship going at warp or anything like that, the distance
thing is what I was talking about.
But that's not the same thing,
isn't it?
No, it's not.
I've seen Beyond Darkness precisely one time. Yeah, so I'm not an expert.
But that's not what it's the first one, the first one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the one. It's how Kirk gets back on the ship. After he's marooned.
Oh, no. I'm talking about in the second one where they beam from like Earth to the Klingon homeworld.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, what?
It's the same equation, apparently, to beam that far and to beam onto a ship that's traveling at warp.
Interesting. Voyager did it first was my point. Okay. In this episode specifically.
Yes. Fair. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. We're fighting over like the silliest. Like, neither of us gives a shit about this. But we're just like, no, we're gonna duke it out.
This is a show about arguing.
The three of us arguing over Kelvinverse stuff is especially ridiculous because none of us are huge fans.
Yeah, yeah, well, I find them enjoyable.
They're entertaining.
But the first one I really liked at the time, but the rest of them are like enjoyable but immediately forgettable.
Mm-hmm. What was the third one called? Beyond.
The Thunderdome? Beyond the Moon?
No, the second one was Into Darkness.
They rode a motorcycle.
The third one
is
Beyond
that part.
Enter the Dragon? No, it's, what was it?
I think the third one's just called Beyond. The second one's called Into Darkness.
Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah, it's like a fun extended episode of Star Trek.
I actually enjoyed it more than the second one, to be frank.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're trying to get the translocator operative. They have some one-off line like, oh, that's why they could only do one at a time, because it's so far away.
Okay, fine. Moving on. That's cool.
Then we go to, on the ice planet, Torres and Paris are stumbling around. Let's hope it's worse for them than us. this phaser is just about dead. Then we see Paris doing a smart thing. He's like, okay, the phaser's about dead. So he shoots the snow above the tunnel to make an avalanche. I'm like, oh, that's smart. Smart character choice.
You know,
like
he wanted to shoot an actual person. His murder blood was up.
I'll have to murder this mountain.
How dare you, mountain?
Then him and Torres, like, he's like, okay, they can't last much longer. Let's find a place to hide. And she's like, let me see the phaser. Maybe I can get it working, but her hands are numb. And then he like rubs her hands and blows on them. And then we learn something that I did not know before, that Klingons have a much less of a tolerance for cold than humans. And that immediately felt wrong. And I don't know why.
I don't know.
Probably because of in Star Trek 5, when they go to the prison planet that's run by the Klingons, there's lots of Klingons being in snow and be like, ha ha ha, welcome to the gulag, we love it here.
Well, she does say, we just don't, he said, I thought that was Cardassians. She said, no, we just don't whine about it as much as Cardassians.
Okay.
But Konos is a desert, rocky desert.
That's true.
Kind of world.
Every time they show shots of it, it's like Mordor.
Yeah, there's
and
lava flows.
I feel like
anytime
you see their ships, it's like, it seems like it's hotter.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just because the lighting
is
red.
Maybe it's just like dark and steamy. Yeah.
And like, I couldn't, like I said, I wasn't like mad. I was like,
were you mad about this?
I was furious.
Why were you so upset?
I was fucking furious.
You're just so mad. You should talk about how mad you are.
I was madder than a heck.
Why are you so hostile? God.
So hostile. But then the exchange about like, well, the Cardassians just complain about it more. I'm like, haha, that's funny. And it felt like a very Star Trek in joke. And I was like, okay, it's fine. I'm not in the joke. I don't get it, but I'm accepting is what you're telling me. And they have one more shot. One of the Nerians like fucking collapses dead.
Freezes to death.
Right in front of him. And then they shoot the other one. And then they run off. I was like, their guns? Guys, yeah, they had guns.
Take their guns.
No, I'm going to keep this one little makeshift phaser that has no more charge and run away.
Maybe they're worried they can track their weapons. They've got like something like that on them.
Ooh.
Ooh, they've low-jacked, low-jacked all their guns. The technology exists. You can GPS tag a weapon. It happens right here in the year of our Lord, 2019.
It's real. Meanwhile, Tuvok and Janeway are still trying to get the translocator to work.
Right.
Like, okay, we've got the biosensors. There's human life forms in the Argala habitat. Oh my God, it's -20°C. There's a ship approaching. It's Voyager. Which, like, okay, fine. It's time for this all to conveniently wrap up.
Yeah.
Fine. Let's do it. So back on Ice World, Torres is so sleepy. And this is a good exchange, like, on your feet now, Torres. And then they have the argument, which we were talking about, I think obliquely, about, like, we're the same rank. Like, yeah, but I'm a bridge officer and I have seniority by 2 days. And I'm like, of course Torres would know everyone's enlistment date.
Absolutely.
Nope.
Yeah.
You only got me by 2 days, son. And then he's like, do I have to carry you out? And she's like, oh, how dare you and your sexy man face? And they're very, like, sort of grabbing each other. And then they have a beam of shame. Because it beams them to the Earth
and
cage.
They weren't really embracing.
They were just, like, touching each other.
Out of context.
They're like, oh, super awkward. Yeah. Blush.
Yeah, this
we're cold their reactions and we were close are funny to each other.
It's a dumb joke, but the actors sell that moment as kind of lightly comic.
It's fine. It's cute. Yeah. Everyone just wants to get off this plane. I get it. Grab your shit. Let's get off the plane.
Yep.
So then the leader and Rizlan get beamed to Ice World. Then this is actually pretty cool. Janeway just beams there with the phaser in her hand.
Not
I'm
even
like,
cold to me.
She's like, she's got your asses now. And I'm never going to not like Janeway just, you know, burning some fools. She's like, look, I've taken control of your translocation system. And she's like, well, he's like, well, what are you going to do? And you're like, that depends on you. You know, if you let everyone go, let us take apart the translocation system. You can go home. You can go free. And they're like, never! Which I'm like, really? Never? Like, she's got you.
Yeah.
Why are you...
You're dead to rights here. Yeah.
Although
she is sort of saying, all you have to do is let us dismantle your entire way of life, and then you can go free. But I don't know what the other option is here.
No. Also, like, if they knew how to build it once, taking it apart doesn't
Yeah.
Like,
well,
couldn't they just build it again?
Probably. Yes. But at least she can free the ones they have right now. Yeah. She can buy, you know.
And I'm sure at least one of those 94 races are going to be like, yeah, we came to pick up our dudes and now set torpedoes to maximum.
She's hoping that someone more warlike will come back to get their people. And yeah. It's better than the episode where horny Kim and the Tiresians, uh-huh, whatever they were, where they just sort of leave, and I'm like, really, you're not gonna warn anybody else, put a beacon out or something like that, so other people don't fall into this trap. At least they're making some effort. They're not just like Voyager peacing out, you know. They're making some effort to do a Starfleet kind of thing and protect other people from these machinations.
But yeah, so they try to like call her bluff, and she's like, well, I'm sorry, you don't want to be reasonable. I'm going to leave you here to die. And I 100% believe, she's going to leave him.
I think she means it.
You are our captors.
Mm-hmm.
You're dead.
Yep.
This is war now.
Enjoy freezing to death. I hear it's actually one of the better ways to die.
Yeah, you just go to sleep. Mm-hmm. You just go to sleep. You'll start feeling warm a little bit.
But they give in. They give in. Die. Then we have Captain's Log. Everything's fine now. Like,
the end.
I've really started noticing that. They always throw in the Captain's Log. Everything got worked out. Everyone's back where they're supposed to be.
We are ready for next week's episode.
Please enjoy this button scene. Good day, you know.
Yeah.
So, the final scene of the episode, we're on Party Beach. Torres is sitting next to Paris.
Yeah.
And they're trying to, like, talk about their weird relationship. And, you know, they're like, things are pretty chilly there for a while. And he's like, well, feels good to be warm again. Sure does. And then they just have knowing smiles. And let the sun, the fake sun of Party Beach, shine down upon them.
May have been talking about something else.
I think maybe there's some subtext here.
Some sort of metaphor.
But I do like that they keep it on the sub, because I was worried that this scene was going to be like, all of a sudden Tom turns and says, you know, B'Elanna, the reason I act this way is because actually I'm in love with you. But instead they just sort of let it ride.
Let it ride.
No hands touching.
We got more episodes in this season.
Got a healthy 6 to 8 inches separating them there on that futon thing there at Paxdale Beach.
Just sitting in the sun together. Mm-hmm. Knowings. But also any show that just ends with two characters having knowing smiles. I'm like, wow, that's bold.
That's bold.
That's bold after this episode. Yeah, that's the end of the episode. Final thoughts.
I like some parts of this episode.
Yeah.
I like the initial setup, and I like the Chakotay running around sabotaging the ship sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like a lot of things, like, wow, that's really convenient, or wow, that was kind of dumb. So I don't know. I was also just kind of bored through most of it, other than the Chakotay running around sabotaging the ship moment.
Yeah.
But the rest of it, I was like, all right, this is going to be fine, and we'll never talk about it again.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I am.
Yeah, see, I share some of your complaints about convenient story things happening a little bit too quickly or in too forced of a manner. Obviously, I had an issue with the fact that we never really get around to assigning motive to these villains for this weird elaborate operation that they have going. But I wasn't, where I'll disagree with you is I wasn't bored in this episode. There's a lot of set pieces and people are zipping around and teleporting. You don't know what's going on. And there's action and there's Janeway threatening to beam their entire race into an Arctic wasteland and let them freeze to death, you know?
Sure.
So in fact, it moves so quickly in some places that I almost kind of forgot that some of the core structure of this narrative doesn't make a whole lot of sense, that there's things they should be addressing that they aren't. So I wouldn't say it's a masterful piece of storytelling, but I would also say I was definitely entertained by it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, I mean, take that for what you will. I guess it depends on what you want out of an episode, right? I mean, I definitely enjoy the episode. There are enough really good, fun moments to string together, both on sort of a character level and a set piece level. That I think it's fun. There's also things, if you want to dial the microscope up another half a notch, you can see where there's some holes in the actual storytelling process here.
Sure.
But not so much that it detracts from my overall enjoyment of just this kind of fast-paced, crew escaping kind of story that they're telling.
Yeah, I feel similarly to both of you, honestly, where I basically enjoyed it. I feel like, honestly, I feel this would have been better if it had been a two-parter, where like the first half is just dealing with the invasion of the ship. And then we could have really extended the tension and Chakotay being a badass sabotaging the ship and all that, like dwindling resources, dwindling manpower. What do we do? And then the final act is like, oh shit, we're being invaded. And then it ends on a cliffhanger with everyone is beamed off the ship.
Yeah.
You don't know where they went. And then you have to wait till next episode to like them escaping. And then I think they would have had more time to explore a lot of these ideas.
Kind of like Basics, but like better.
Yeah, but good.
Yeah, Basics, well, but it could have been good.
Well, yeah, I guess that could work. It could work because we've seen all those ideas in other episodes.
Yeah, and
literally everything is, you know, they've been off the ship. They've had someone go commando. Last time it was Janeway, you know. And you know, like all those ideas, those things have happened.
Stuff like that's going to get reused over the course of certain seasons.
Of course.
But I think where you could have made it different and interesting is by getting more into the unusual practices and motivations of these villains. Well, we knew why the Kazon wanted the ship because they were like, holy shit, this is the nicest damn ship in this.
It's got replicators.
Yeah. We can eat. They got sheets on the beds. I don't know why I gave the Kazon that accent.
But I like food.
That would have been better. Yeah, I think a little more space to bring some of that to a slower boil and then have episode two of that two-parter be kind of the action.
Oh, no, I agree.
Would have worked better, would have given them space to do some more fun stuff with this and make it all make sense, but...
Isn't that a Dr. Beverly episode where people just start disappearing from the ship?
Yeah, until at the end it's just her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it was something like that.
So maybe they felt like they couldn't do it because Next Gen had already done it. No, but in general, like this episode kind of like solidified the sort of feeling I've had over the past few episodes, sort of the back end of season three, where I've tried to separate this from the normal, like, man, we've done a lot of episodes of this podcast.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know, that it feels like there's a lack of momentum at the end of this season, where the end of season two, as weird as it was, the whole Paris is evil and a traitor and Seska, and as weird as that all landed, there was a feeling of momentum. This is all going somewhere.
Yeah.
And this season feels like it doesn't know where to go. And it's sort of each episode is kind of a bottle episode.
Kind of monster of the week.
Monster of the week.
Yeah.
Generic standard issue Star Trek story that would work with any ship in any time. Nothing specific to sort of the tone and feel of Voyager.
I don't hate the generic
I don't
show
either.
Because I feel like the previous episode, what is it?
Dino DNA.
I thought that was good.
Yeah, and this one I feel is okay.
This one's all right.
It's okay. Like there was enough stuff that I really enjoyed.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, okay, it's fine. I like it. It's fine. But there's a feeling of the show itself becoming tired.
Yeah.
And I know they were kind of like losing, we had talked about this before, they were losing ratings, their budgets were getting shrunk because of that.
I feel like probably as a production, they were,
there had to have been
they
a
were
feeling,
legit lost.
There had to have been a feeling of like, oh my God, is there a next season? What's going to happen?
Yeah.
So I'm really because I know that next season is the Jerry Ryan season. I don't know if she arrives at the tail end of this season or whatever, but like that was the shot in the arm that kind of revitalized the show. So I'm kind of looking forward to that because right now I'm like, whoo, I don't know if I'd want to watch four more seasons of this Voyager. Even though there's stuff I enjoy and I like the characters and I like the setting and all that kind of stuff. And I even like this episode. I'll admit it. I like this episode. But it's just kind of like, oh man. And it's not as weird as it was earlier in this season and from season two into the top of season three. There's just some weird choices. And this now it's just kind of like, I don't know what's going on. But yeah, but anyway, I like this episode.
Why?
He just explained it.
Oh, okay.
How dare
Where
you?
Were you?
I was thinking about a head full of, a Medusa head full of dicks.
A dick dusa.
a medixa? No, that's not right.
Wow. Maybe this podcast is tired.
Have we ever stopped to consider that maybe we're the problem?
We're creating this. This podcast is creating Voyager through communication to the past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could not be more clear. We're creating, we made this happen.
We have no one to blame but ourselves.
The good citizens of the jury have reviewed the evidence. Gentlemen, your closing arguments.
Thank you, Your Honor. Displaced is garbage. It's just so dumb. Why not close the door to the cold place where Baylana and Tom ran off to? Just shut them in there, and when they freeze to death, go scoop them up. Also, why would the most crucial control station of your ship be so poorly guarded? It's ridiculous. Why would Tom and Baylana leave two fully charged phaser rifles when their makeshift blaster had no charge left? The answer to all these questions and more is, of course, the same. Stupidity. For whatever reason, this is how the plot is propelled forward, powered by sheer stupidity, with everyone taking turns being the biggest dumbass. Thank you.
Commander Spurlock?
Your Honor, motives are overrated. We don't need to know why primordial life crawled its way out of the muck. We don't need to know why Mr. Continuum keeps an inflatable Dr. Pulaski doll in the passenger seat of his space car. I don't need to know why these aliens are collecting people in ships from technologically inferior societies at tremendous expense of time and resources. The question that matters is not why, but rather did. As in, did you enjoy this episode? I certainly did. And I think you did, too.
Ultimately, the fate of this voyage is up to you good beings on the jury. But it is my terrible responsibility to pass judgment based on the argument and evidence placed before the court today. After reviewing it all, I hereby decree that Case 324, Displaced, is garbage. These verdicts cannot be appealed. They are final and irrevocable within this quadrant, space-time continuum, and county. Court adjourned.
The People vs. Star Trek Voyager is recorded in front of no one. Space Judge Midnightian Later is played by Derek Adams. The prosecution, Super Duper Looper Sea Lord, Super Duper Looper Admiral of the Grand Super Duper Looper Fleet, John Q. Continuum Esquire, is played by Jonathan Sparks. The defense, Commander Matthias Zap Spurlock, is played by Josh Darnell. All episodes of Star Trek Voyager are presumed good until proven garbage.
Shadow Public Radio presentation. For more excruciating action, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you seek podcast content.